Hello, I'm Simone de Rochefort, and oh God, I am a video producer at Polygon, which is what most people know me for. And I'm also a very visibly aromantic and bisexual person at Polygon, which has been a very cool slow burn reveal over the course of my years working there and like being a part of the video team, which means that my face is often out there and visible. Other things I do with my time besides playing video games for work and for pleasure and breaking my body doing so are writing romance novels. I love to write
Really?
historical romance novels. Yeah, I do.
I didn't know that.
Oh,
Oh
some
my
fun
gosh.
trivia about me. Yeah, I mean that's an odd aspect. Well, I won't call it an odd aspect of my identity, but it certainly is an aspect of my identity that's like it's romance novels are like a fun play zone for me because those feelings just don't really crop up in my life, and so I love like the heightened drama of them and all the fun historical sexy times. So currently I'm working on some 1920s queer historical romance novels with mystery because I love Agatha Christie. I'm obsessed with like those old mysteries.
Yes,
Yes, so that's what I kind of
a
do in my off
queen.
time.
Simone offered to tell me a story about a family visit that meant a lot to her, and things got pretty emotional, which I think surprised both of us a little. Fun fact, the best friend she talks about is Emmett from the previous episode, A Vision of an Angry Queer Angel. If you haven't listened to that one yet, be sure to check it out. I'm Sophie Kaner, and this is Edges.
So I had one of those experiences that I'm gonna get emotional about, but it. Whew. Sorry. It was one of those experiences that kind of felt like when you're in that moment that it was very meaningful. And what it was just like very simple, which was my best friend was visiting me in New York State, and this friend of the story isn't even sad. The story isn't even sad, so I don't know why I'm crying. And I had just gotten back from a work trip that was like it was a lot. And we had some time off, so and my dad happened to be in the country. There's a lot of layers of this. My dad lives in France. He was in the country at the
Oh,
time. He was visiting
okay.
my grandmother in Vermont. So, and my best friend was staying with me. So it was this experience where it was like, okay, I suddenly have this time. And like, I barely see my grandma. I barely see my dad. We're gonna go. I'm taking you out of this hot hell city and we're going to Vermont. It was August. It was like soup in New York City where like your skin is damp 100%
Yes,
of the time.
and everything is filthy.
Oh, everything is so dirty and the air is so heavy and it's just so miserable.
Disgusting.
Yeah, and it like it starts it never starts off bad, but like by August, everyone is at their breaking point. So, Vermont. Going to Vermont. And I took him to my grandma's house, which is in this like very small town in Vermont. And it's a place that I should preface this with later that year, my grandmother died. So that's why I'm so sad. And there was a lot of conversation about what would happen to this house because it's been in the family for 50 years or something. And actually, just this last weekend, as we are recording this, I went up there with my dad and his siblings to clean out all her stuff and put it in boxes and take a lot of it home, which was great. We were finding things like books. Like there's a book of Tennyson's poems, The May Queen, from like the 1880s or something. Like that's the kind of thing that she has in this house, along with just like a bunch of garbage also. But and like family. You'd open a book and there'd be a letter that was written to her mother in the leaves of it. So like going through all these books and like
Oh my
finding old letters. Yeah,
gosh.
it was so much, Sophie.
Wow.
We also found like a little wooden box of index cards with recipes that my great grandmother had like written down. So it was her entire recipe collection in this little box. Wow. It was amazing. So much stuff. We filled a 30-foot dumpster. Not with that. Keeping the recipes. Filled the dumpster with broken dishes and farm equipment.
Wow.
Yeah. So this beautiful farm in Vermont. It's set in like 70 acres. There's this beautiful pond at the bottom of the hill. The house is at the top of the hill. The pond is at the bottom. And then there's just forest and fields. And she would always lease the fields to this woman who raised Bashker Curly horses. So you'd go there in the summer and there'd be this herd of horses with their little hairy babies. Bashker Curlies. For those, if you're not familiar with Bashker Curlies, they are horses that have curly hair, which is fucking great. They are wild. They're actually very tame. But they are, you know, the babies are, because they have, like, their baby hair, they're so curly, and they have their little curly forelocks, and they're so cute.
Wow. So, that is a field blessing.
It's so good. I absolutely love them, and, you know, you see them, you know, wandering through the fields, stepping in their own poop and everything. It's very romantic, I imagine. Beautiful. So, I've set the scene. Lovely. So, and it's no reception there either, by the way, because it's just like so deep in the country. There's no cell service. So I took my best friend up there and I realized, like, as we were there, he's the only one of my friends, like, in my whole life to meet my grandmother, because I grew up on the West Coast. All of my friends are on the West Coast and she lived in Vermont. So it was just this part of my childhood that had never been shared with anyone that I was really close to outside my family. And my family is kind of nuts. They're wonderful and I love them. But my grandmother was just a person who was so full of these ridiculous stories, like stretching back to I don't know when. Like, she knew everything about everyone in our family, living or dead. And she would, like, have this story about how so-and-so had met, like, a Russian princess in, like, after World War I. I don't know. And I don't remember any of these stories. And it kills me. Like, stories of people, like, in unhappy marriages who died in hotel fires in Shanghai in the 50s. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so it was this wonderful experience where, you know, we all would sit down to dinner, my grandmother, my best friend, and I, and my dad and his girlfriend, who was also there. It was her first time meeting my grandmother as well, so very important. Yeah. And she'd be telling these stories, and I could look at my best friend and, like, communicate with my eyes, like, are you fucking hearing this shit? Like, it's the kind of stories that she would tell about our past family members are the stuff that would be on critically acclaimed HBO series Succession or Big Little Lies in terms of drama. So it was wild just to not be able to just say, like, you know, all families are weird. And my family also has some very weird, deep stories. But to actually, like, have him experience that firsthand so that he could be like, you are valid. This is why you're a freak. So
how long were you there with everyone?
I think about 4 days. It was a pretty short trip. We actually got lost on the way. I rented a car. I dragged him all the way to Newark to rent a car, and we drove up. It's like a 6-hour drive or something.
Oh my gosh.
And our car almost ran out of gas as we were, like, going up through the hills, the quote-unquote mountains. I'm from Washington. I don't think those are real mountains. And we get to this gas station. It's, like, 7:05 p.m., and we pull in. And they're like, we turn off the pumps at 7. And I was like, what the fuck?
Oh, my God.
You turn them off? You what?
Well, turn them back on again.
Please. My family is dying.
Do you know who I am?
No, they don't, because they can't watch YouTube because they have no reception. Data plans.
So yeah, we had to like turn the car back around and coast down the hill to the nearest town, which was still like 10 minutes away to get the 24-hour gas. And we were very late. And of course, I couldn't phone to be like, hey, I'm going to be an hour late because had no reception. Right. Yeah. So we just spent like a lovely 4 or so days there, just kind of doing what I always do at my grandma's house, which is bum around, read books, walk in the woods, and pet horses.
Wow.
Yeah. And go to the Vermont Country Store. And it was just very, very, it was really lovely and nice. And I just remember as we drove away at the very end of the trip, I just had this feeling that, like, this was a very important weekend. And I knew, like, that my grandma was getting on in years and she was having some, like, minor health problems during the trip, and she was still like extremely sharp mentally. Like, she was always so sharp. She never became unsharp. She never lost her like awareness. Yeah, as I was driving away, it just felt like, okay, this is it felt very final. And it wasn't final. I did see her one more time after that, but it definitely had this feeling of like, okay, this was definitely an experience that you're not going to repeat, and it's very important. So, and it really meant a lot that I was able to share that with, like, my best friend, who I lived with for 4 or 5 years. I can never remember, and he's going to make fun of me. You know, we lived together. We were roommates in college, and for a year or so, maybe two. I'm the worst. After college, like, we've talked about, you know, moving back in together someday when we live in the same city again, because he's like a person that I click with on every level. Yeah. So to share that with him, plus to share that with my grandmother, mm-hmm. plus to like have my dad and his girlfriend there for part of it as well, like, because I never see him. So that was, you know, I didn't expect to see him that weekend. I didn't expect to have time for it. So it was a very much like, I have to get up there. I have to make this work, because having all of these people together is going to be very important. So, yes, that is a story of a time when a lot of important relationships of mine became a Venn diagram that was a circle, and it still feels very significant.
There's such a specialness when two people you love meet each other. And, like, you get to share that love that you have for each of them.
Yeah, you're so right. I love sharing people with people. That's, like, anytime I can introduce two friends and I know they're gonna get on, I'm like, yes, this is my calling in life to mix these two friend circles. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, sharing people that I care for with each other is like, no wonder it's so important to me.
Yeah, no, it gives you like a very special warmth, I think. What was the interaction like between your grandma and your best friend?
It was a little awkward, like, at times, you know, because she's like so old and of her time. I think she really did try to be respectful of him, but there were still moments when I was like, the elderly, please. But like they did, you know, they got on and they talked about books and stuff. I remember we were sitting around talking about the Fitzgeralds, Scott and Zelda Fitzgerald, and she told this story about how she and a college friend were visiting her friend's mother, and the mother had been friends with Scott and Zelda Fitzgerald and was telling a story about a party that they were all at together where, like, Zelda came down and swung on the chandelier, and I was like, okay, come on now. First you have the entire repository of our family history in your brain, and now you're 1 degree away from Zelda Fitzgerald. Calm down, Grandma.
Swinging from the chandelier.
I know! And like, if I could, there's a lot of things I would ask her if I still could, but I would definitely make sure that she recounted every single memory she had of that conversation to me, because I want to know more.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
We draw these lines to delineate what family is, you know, and it has to do with blood relationship. Plus, for some reason, we put romance in there.
Yeah.
Like, that gets to be part of it, too. But, I mean, your best friend is your family.
Yeah, 100%.
That's very obviously your family, and this is a meeting of different parts of your family, and there's just, like, a magic and a closeness to that.
Yeah, magic and closeness is the perfect way to describe it. And I think, like, when I think about how much work someone would have to do, a new person to come into my life and, like, supposedly take that, you know, place of prime closeness away from him and from all the other people that are so important to me in my life. Like, that's... No... Not gonna happen.
Yeah, like that spot is taken.
Yeah, yeah. Which is like, yeah. Not to say that there's, you know, no incentive for me to meet new people and become close to them and make them, raise them up to importance in my life. But I don't see that my relationship with my best friend should be devalued because it's not romantic, you know? Because he's really important to me and I love him.
Yes. I think that's probably, I don't know, that's like an important thing, or at least an option to keep in mind, no matter whether you're romantic or not. Like, because, again, I think artificially maybe we do have this idea that your romantic partner needs to be the person, the most important person.
Yeah.
And I don't know who decided that.
Fools. Absolute fools who, like... don't realize how important it is to have so many people in your life that you can rely on for everything. Like, there, frankly, there's no way that that burden should ever fall to one person because, you know, we all, for however much our lives might be simplified by not being in romantic relationships, you know, everyone has so much going on in their lives at any one time, and it's really unfair to ever expect one person to, like, be your go-to for everything. And I think it's just so important to, like, cultivate a lot of, or however many close relationships works for you, because you can all support each other. And in the same way that, like, maybe we all have that one friend who dumps all of their problems on you. Like, that's not a sustainable relationship. You gotta spread it around like fertilizer. Right.
Yes.
Unfortunately, my best friend is the person that I will now dump every grandmother-related feeling on. Sorry, buddy.
Congratulations.
You won the lottery.
You know, that, well, actually, that makes me wonder, and maybe I should just do my research on this one, but when you write and you write about romantic relationships, like, do you take that perspective in, you know, like, this lens that, like, because I think that you have a sort of widened perspective
no.
on romance. So you don't. You just do the normal. That's awesome.
I'm so bad at it. No. This is a personal
that's great.
Failing.
I love that.
I am trying to get better at ensemble casts. It is hard. There are so many characters. And sometimes it's easier to just have two.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that's totally legit. But, I mean, and also, like, it's just fair that, like, in a narrative, there's something very compelling about, like,
that's true.
That strong relationship between two people, even if it's not specifically what you want in real life.
Also, hashtag I am the problem.
You personally.
I am. I can always
you
do better.
Personally are the specific problem, and if you would just get it together, I really think
I'm holding all of us back.
Yes. Thanks a lot, Simone.
You're welcome. We're learning and growing at exactly my pace. But yeah, to take it out of, like, the negative space of, like, this is why romantic relationships aren't important. They are. They definitely are. But, like, this for me is a moment that I'll, you know,
I can only share it with the people who were there. And it's just, it was such a formative and like you said, moment of magic and closeness for me of like everyone, not everyone important to me, several people who are important to me, being in the same place at the same time, and it'll never happen again. And it's weird that it happened in the first place.
Yeah.
Statistically impossible. And I just think that's so cool. It makes me so happy to think about, even though I did cry for 90% of that retelling of it.
Next time on Edges.
It was well known that she liked dogs, so periodically a dog would get dropped off at her house, and we'd find a home for him, and one of them ended up sticking.
Okay.
So we had this third dog.
So you were like 20?
I was, when this happened, yeah, I was 19 or 20.
Wow, okay.
And
living with somebody.
Yes. Is that bad, Sophie?
I wasn't living with anybody
is that bad?
Until I was older.
Was I a bad girl?
If you want to support Edge's podcast, the best ways to do that are to leave a rating or review on your podcast app or follow at Edge's Podcast on Twitter. If you tweet at the show, I might read your tweet in the credits. You can also pledge to the show's Patreon by going to patreon.com/edgespodcast. That's patreon.com/edgespodcast. For $2 per month, you'll receive a thank you in the show notes of each episode. For $4, you'll receive episodes 3 days early. For $7, you'll access bonus material that I cut from the episode. And for $10, you'll hear me thank you by name in these closing credits. Please consider supporting the show in whatever way you can, as I literally cannot do it without you. Thank you so much to my $10 Patreon supporters, Angel Acevedo, Benjamin Redman, Caroline Seidman, Colby Rowan, Garrett M., Jack, Red L., and Reese. I am so grateful that you enable me to continue producing this show. On Twitter, Sungjung at DefinitelyEvie says, "New favorite hobby, doing homework while listening to Edge's podcast. It feels like chilling after school with your best friends." I love that. We're your best friends. I hope the homework is going well. In this week's bonus track, Simone tells me a little more about her experience of being an aromantic person navigating life and relationships. The Edges logo is by Alice Chung, and original music is by Ryan Vibert. Edges Podcast is created and produced by me, Sophie Kaner.